smile. But when Torok reached for the fossil, Carlton grabbed his thick wrist.
What?
The biologist demanded.
No one can touch it but you.
Let me make a cast of it first, Carlton replied tightly. Torok smiled at him.
You're being very proprietary.
Smiling back, Carlton said, wouldn't you be? Torok shrugged good-naturedly and stepped away from the fossil.
I presume, said Chang, that you will no longer be using explosives.
Right. From now on, we dig in the pit the old-fashioned way, with hand picks and wire brushes.
We?
I'm going to need a gang of volunteers to help excavate the site, Carlton said, looking directly at Chang.
Impossible, the director said flatly.
Schedule is fully committed. No one is available.
I'll help you, said one of the biologists.
Me too,
a woman technician called out.
And me.
None of you is excused from your regular duties, Chang shouted. Schedule must be maintained.
We'll do it in our spare time, the woman said. Half a dozen others nodded agreement.
I'll set up a schedule, said Doreen McManus. I'll need you all to tell me when you'd be free to help.
Grinning, Carlton ignored the mission director, scooped up his fossil, and started toward the laboratory he had taken for himself on the other side of the dome, where he could make a plaster cast of the vertebra. Almost half the assembled staff followed after him, chattering among themselves, laughing, eyes alight with the thrill of discovery. This is like old times, Carlton said to himself, like back at the university. It's good to have an entourage. Chang planted his plump fists on his hips and glared at them all. He saw the power of his position eroding, his authority melting away like snow in the springtime sunshine. But there was nothing he could do about it. Not at this particular moment. San Simeon, California. Board of Education.
Meeting will come to order, said Chairperson Lisa Goodfellow.
The four other men and women sitting around the oval table stopped their conversations and turned their attention to the chairperson. Seated at the opposite end of the table from the chairperson was Oliver Maxwell. While the board members were dressed in California casual clothes, open-neck shirts and relaxed, comfortable jeans, Maxwell wore a sky-blue sports jacket over his shirt and tie.
In deference to Mr. Maxwell, who has a plane to catch, I propose we consider his item on the agenda before anything else. Any objections?
No one said a word. The chairperson smiled at Maxwell.
The floor is all yours, sir.
Maxwell remained in his chair, smiling back at the board members. He was a stocky man in his late 40s, with crinkles around his deep-set eyes.
This won't take long.
I represent the Mars Foundation, as most of you already know. The Foundation wants to make its package of learning materials available to the schools of your district. Almost as an afterthought, he added, for free, of course.
A package of learning materials? Asked one of the board members.
About Mars. About the exploration work going on there, Maxwell said. The life forms that they found. The cliff dwellings. The ancient volcanoes. The kids will love it.
About Mars? Said the chairperson, almost in a whisper.
Videos, texts, pictures. The kids will love it, Maxwell repeated. One of the two male board members, tanned and sun-blonde as a beachcomber, knit his brows.
This is science stuff, isn't it?
Nodding, Maxwell replied, the exploration's being done by scientists, yes, but it's exciting. It's an adventure in discovery. The beachcomber shook his head. Turning to the chairperson, he complained,
Look, they tried to ram Darwin down our throats last year.
That was 2 years ago, corrected the woman sitting opposite him.
Whatever. These scientists are always trying to sneak their ideas into the school curriculum. It's our duty to protect our children from their secularist propaganda.
But it's not propaganda, Maxwell cried, sounding genuinely hurt.
It's real. They're actually searching for the remains of a village that intelligent Martians lived in millions of years ago.
Yeah, and I'm descended from a monkey.
There's no proof that intelligent people lived on Mars, said the woman across the table. It's all unproven theories. But
the chairperson smiled sweetly at Maxwell once more.
We thank you for the Foundation's very generous offer. The board will take it under consideration. But
I know you have a plane to catch. We'll get in touch with you once we've come to a decision.
Reluctantly, Maxwell got to his feet and shuffled out of the meeting room. He knew what the board's decision would be, and he didn't look forward to the next stop on his itinerary, Salt Lake City. Albuquerque, Duran Condominiums. With the first ring of the phone, Jamie's eyes snapped wide awake. That's the emergency line, he told himself. The apartment had a direct phone link with the program's headquarters on the university campus. Jamie always thought of it as the emergency line. No one used it unless something urgent had happened. He sat up in bed and grabbed the handset before the phone could ring again. Glancing over his bare shoulder at Vijay, stirring slightly in her sleep, he half-whispered, "Waterman."
"Dr. Waterman."
Jamie recognized the young man's voice. He was one of the grad students who worked the night shift at the headquarters monitoring consoles.
"Yes?"
"This is Oscar Somoza, sir."
"What's happened?" Jamie felt his insides nodding.
"We just got a transmission from Tithonium."
"What's happened?" Jamie hissed angrily.
"They think they found a fossil, sir. Dr. Carlton says..."
"Carlton? A fossil?"
Vijay rubbed her eyes, muttering,
"What's the matter?"
"Dr. Carlton sent stereo images,"
Somoza was saying, his voice trembling slightly with excitement.
"He also sent them to a shitload of universities."
"Can you pipe the imagery to my computer?"
"Sure, no sweat."
Vijay leaned her bare body against him, pressing her ear to the side of his head, trying to hear what was being said.
"Okay, good," Jamie said into the phone. "Thanks for calling me."
"Sorry about the hour," Somoza apologized.
"I thought you'd want to know."
"You did the right thing." He hung up the phone, turned, and kissed Vijay so hard on the lips that she gasped, then leaped out of bed and shouted a heartfelt, "Yahoo!"
"What on earth is it?"
"It's not on Earth. It's on Mars," Jamie said, almost breathless with excitement.
"A fossil. Some sort of bone that Carlton's dug up."
"A fossil?"
"He's done it!" Jamie pranced naked to the bureau and started pulling out shirts, socks, underwear.
"He's found the remains of the village, I'm willing to bet."
"You think so?"
"It's got to be." He rushed to the closet and pulled out his well-traveled roll-on suitcase.
"Where are you going?"
"Boston," Jamie said, stuffing clothes into the bag. "I've got to get together with Dex about this." Vijay smiled at him, despite her bruised lip. Boston, Trumbull Trust Boardroom. "Sorry I'm late," Jamie said as he entered the boardroom. "My flight was delayed." Dex Trumbull got up from his high back chair at the head of the long polished conference table, looking more like his own father than ever in a dark three-piece suit and narrow tie. "Should have taken a clipper ship, Jamie. Get you here in 20 minutes. Jamie was wearing a suede sports jacket over his open-necked shirt and jeans. "They don't have clipper ship service in Albuquerque," he said as he took his seat halfway down the table and nodded greetings to the other board members. "I'd have to go down to the spaceport in Alamogordo." The table was only half-filled, he saw. A lot of absentees for this hastily called special meeting of the board. "You wouldn't get me on one of those rockets," grumbled the white-haired man on his left. "Shoot off into the sky like that? I don't care how fast they go." Jamie made a slow smile. "I've ridden on lots of rockets, Mel. They're safer than airplanes, really." "Maybe," the white-haired man muttered. "Maybe." Dex tapped on the table with a jeweled pen. "Well, now that our science director is here, we have a quorum. So I'll call this special meeting of the Trumbull Trust Board of Directors to order." The boardroom was elegantly paneled in light walnut. One entire wall was windowed. Jamie saw the towers of Boston's financial district clustered out there, and beyond them the choppy waters of the harbor. Sailboats coasted between the islets, colorful billowing sails against the foaming white caps and sparkling blue water. Jamie always felt slightly uneasy at the sight of so much water. It stretched to the horizon and beyond, all the way to Britain and Europe, he knew. So much water. It almost made him shudder. He listened perfunctorily as the board members agreed to skip the reading of the last meeting's minutes.